And this just doesn't look like the Corbin Carroll that we're used to seeing. It could be that he's just cold right now. It wouldn't shock me if we found out that there was some kind of nagging injury that was affecting his swing.
It's BA Hot Sheet. How we doing? Scotty Braun, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce. Right off the jump here, we have prospect call-ups. Guys, good to see you both. And JJ, we're about to dive into a prospect call-up from a team that needs all of the help that it can get right now, to put it lightly, and that is the Colorado Rockies. Yeah, it is BA prospect profile time right off the top here. So JJ, the Colorado Rockies are calling up Jordan Beck. And before we get into Jordan, the Rockies have really been struggling as a ball club. This is something that's been going on for the last few years. This season, the expectations were low. They can't seem to take a lead and run with it for an entire game. So an offensive boost would be nice. Can Jordan Beck provide it?
Somewhat. I think if we're expecting Jordan Beck to become the savior that turns around the Rockies season, that's probably asking a little too much. And that probably would be asking a little too much for, I don't know, Juan Soto, Mike Trout, take your pick. But if you said, can Beck help get them to a better place? Absolutely. This is a fast mover. This is a guy who has athleticism, power, and especially put him in Coors Field. I'm very excited to see. Jeff, I kind of am looking forward to see how much power he can produce in a ballpark like that.
Yeah, and I think you look at someone like Beck, you know, dating back to his time at Tennessee, and you know, even as a prep player, the power was notable. But the thing is he's not just sort of this lumbering power hitter. I think we see a lot of that, you know, recently with a guy like Hunter Goodman or someone like that, where like, hey, this power is going to play in Coors. This guy's a real athlete. He's really improved as a defender. Last year, you know, I got a lot of scouts that had him as above average in center field. So he can play a few different positions out there. Coors is cavernous. I know it's a home run park, but it's really a batting average on balls in play park more than anything else. That's where the biggest boost is. The power's big. He has enough plate skills. There is swing and miss in the game. He is going to swing and miss. He's not an outstanding on base guy, but he does get on base, does work deep in accounts. But he's got power. He can do some electric stuff on the field. He's a really exciting player. And with Nolan Jones, you know, going on the IL, he's obviously a pretty good replacement there just in terms of like-for-like skills. Maybe a little bit more aggressive at the plate, but I'm not so sure that that's a bad thing.
What does the future of the Rockies outfield look like in your mind right now, JJ? Is there – well, yeah, Jeff, you start. Is there enough there? And I know we've talked about Zach Veen for years now too.
Yeah, and I sat on Hartford. You know, I've seen – I cover the Rockies system year-round. I cover it for the handbook. I cover it on the website. Pretty close to Hartford here, so I see a fair amount of their good prospects come through AA, and sat on the Portland-Hartford series last week and got a firsthand look at a couple of players that I do think will be in this outfield shortly. One, as you mentioned, is Zach Veen. Veen is way back. He looks healthy. He looks like the guy you would have seen 2 years ago. And for the first time, sort of in three tries, though I think he gets a bit of a mulligan for the end of the season in 22 and then the injuries that he incurred sort of coming into the season and then played through in the early part of 2023, he's finally finding success at AA. Some folks that are on the ball club kind of referred to him as their best hitter, their most clutch guy right now in terms of that Hartford team, which is loaded. I mean, it's a team that has Adel Amador on that team. They have Sterling Thompson on that team, the aforementioned Yankeel Fernandez. But I think all of these guys are viable everyday regulars, maybe with some more upside to be above average regulars, if some of the skills and some of those things kind of come to fruition. But I think we're sort of seeing the player that Zach Veen was when he was still considered a top 100 prospect. It wouldn't shock me if he sneaks back onto the list at some point this year.
The other thing that stands out to me about this is that Jordan Beck becomes the third Tennessee Vol from the 2022 draft to make it to the big leagues, which that's a lot. Okay. But then you think about the fact there's only been 10 big leaguers from that draft class so far. So 30% of all the big leaguers from the 2022 draft so far are Tennessee Vols, which is just yet another reminder of just how crazy that team was. That team was, if that team had done what LSU did last year by going all the way, we would talk about it as maybe the greatest college team of all time. They led the nation in ERA by by almost a run over any other team in college baseball D1 in 2022. They also were there in runs scored. They were, I think, second in the country. Home runs, they led the country. Strikeout to walk ratio, all these different categories. And they did it with extreme talent. We talk about Beck, Ben Joyce, the reliever, has already been up for the Angels. Trey Lipscomb is up for the Nationals, third baseman. And then we have a whole lot of guys coming behind them. Chase Dollinger, who was the first round pick, speaking of the Rockies last year, is in high A. We have Drew Gilbert in triple A for the Mets. We have pretty much almost an entire lineup. And by the way, freshmen on that team, Chase Burns, Drew Beam. Chase Burns is our number four prospect for this year's draft class. Drew Beam looks like he could be a first rounder, number 29 prospect in this year's draft class. But we could look back on this 2022 Tennessee team in a few years and say, wow, you know, this is one of the great teams as far as producing pro players, as well as the fact that they were one of the dominant teams in college baseball. But with that one giant asterisk, which is they got knocked out in the Super Regional, they didn't make it to Omaha. They didn't win at all.
It's a great recruiting chip, though, JJ. Hey, I know we didn't win that year, but if you're talking to a young high schooler, I don't think they care that much about that. In fact, you'd say, hey, I think you can actually help us win that championship. And, oh, by the way, I know that team didn't make it all the way, but do you see what that alumni list looks like right now? Right? I mean, I'm sure you use that as best as you can.
I don't know if Tony V needs any more help to recruit. He's a phenomenal recruit.
Great point, Jeff.
Yeah, this is part of it. Okay, so lastly, to wrap up this prospect profile, and I know you touched on a little bit here, Jeff, where are we at in general with the Rockies? Like last time we looked at them from a team ranking perspective and just the philosophy and direction of this ball club, because it feels like it's been the same for a long time. And maybe that has to do with the continuity of the front office. And I don't know if that's good or bad.
I think you could probably make the case that, you know, in some ways it's good and in other ways it's bad. You know, I think at times it's funny, the Rockies are difficult because they kind of have bottomed out at the major league level. 2023 was the worst season in franchise history. It doesn't look like it's getting any better in 2024. But I think if you want to be optimistic about it, they have done a pretty good job over the last couple of years of drafting and developing. They've got some young players in the system and some young players on that team. Nolan Jones was a pretty dang good trade that they made with the Guardians. They've acquired some nice pieces. I think that you can look at the positional group, at least, that they have in the majors, some of the guys they have in AA and AAA in the upper minors, Jordan Beck among that group, and say, hey, there's a decent above average team here. There's a bunch of different regulars at a variety of positions. You have strong defenders. You have, you know, outstanding defenders up the middle, frankly, and a guy like Drew Romo, Ezekiel Tovar, who's at the major league level, and then Brenton Doyle, who the bat seems like it's coming along too. I think it's just a matter of the pitching developing. They have some guys like Palmquist, who's, you know, impressed, Sean Sullivan, who's impressed, Chase Dolander, who's impressed, but they're probably still a year or two away from impact. So I think it's one of those things where you can look at some positives in terms of what's in the system, how they're developing, how they've been drafting versus how they drafted and developed over the last couple of years. And that's kind of led them to these poor showings and results in the major league level over the last two seasons.
But the tough thing to me about all of this is that when you look at the Rockies and you look at this division, I can't really chart an easy path for them not to catch the Dodgers. They're not going to catch the Dodgers, but I have trouble charting a path where they catch the D-backs or, you know, stay ahead of the Padres or the Giants. It's just a very rough situation if you're a Rockies fan right now, because, you know, your goal is can you get to be third best in this division in a year, which might be enough to sneak you into a wild card spot down the road. But you're really not looking at it and saying, hey, I've got a shot to win a division. There's a lot of great fans there. We've seen that, you know, year in, year out. If that team wins at all, they pack that park. But, you know, you just look at it right now and you say they do have some young talent coming. It is kind of hopefully, you know, for Rockies fans, trending up a little bit. But at the same time, it's really hard to just map out a scenario from here where it's like, okay, this is when the Rockies are going to challenge, you know, for not just to win the division, but challenge for a playoff spot in a division that's so difficult, so tough.
Yeah, they're not scoring. They're bottom of the barrel so far. We're a month in. in scoring. The projections weren't friendly towards that route. The, you know, weighted runs created plus is towards the bottom of the barrel for this team as well. You're down there with teams like the White Sox and the Marlins, yet players that Jeff mentioned are kind of thriving. I mean, Tovar was an elite glove from the jump last year, but the bat wasn't there. Again, it's a month in, but the bat's been much better this year. And you're right, same thing with Brenton Doyle. He's off to a great start, frankly, offensively for this team, getting on base. I mean, so there are a few, you know, individuals there that at least show signs
glimmers.
They can be regulars. There's what?
Glimmers. There's little, like, there's rays of sunshine peeking through, but it's still a pretty overcast layer. It's little spots.
Exactly. All right, so we'll see if Jordan Beck can help the cause there. And let's move on to our first move. Talking Brody Brecht again. Why not? Let's jump right into it. Jeff, what do you have? Because, you know, we touched on him. Was it last week or the week before? I think it was last week. We talked about, you know, how Brody is on the rise right now. He was a star in Helium spot. And now I think we have to bring him up again because the performance continues to wow everyone right now at the college level.
Yeah, he's just continued to impress. And, you know, it's kind of funny. He reminds me of somebody I know that we were had a chance to speak with today, but some things got moved around. But it reminds me a lot of what we saw from Cade Horton leading up to that 2022 draft, where, now granted, it was an injury versus a player that was going full-time for baseball for the first time and kind of learning his stuff and how to, you know, command his arsenal, which is what Brecht's issue is. But what we're seeing is down the stretch here, heading into the end of the season, Brecht is really taking a big step forward. And I think it's in a draft class where, you know, after the first, we'll say 5, 6, 7 picks, there's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of teams in that top 15 that are looking to draft a pitcher. And, you know, I know the Red Sox in particular are one team where, you know, they've been sort of mentioned around a lot of different pitchers, but a lot of those guys have sort of, like Yesovich, et cetera, have pitched themselves into the top 10. I think Brecht is probably a consideration there. And when you look at the stuff under the hood, it's excellent. Great slider. It's probably his best pitch. You know, JJ and I were talking about this off air, but it's actually thrown just as frequently as his fastball, and he lands it for strikes at a higher rate than he lands his fastball for strikes. So he actually commands his slider better. Fits in perfectly with the Red Sox and sort of what their mentality has been, even at the lower levels, not just the major leagues. And we have seen some results across the board in that organization with some of the philosophy tweaks. The fastball, we know how hard this guy throws. 96, 97 miles an hour, touches 100 on a pretty consistent basis, and that's in-game data. Not a ton of ride, but when you're talking about a guy sort of similar to Paul Skeens, the shape doesn't have to be elite when you're throwing 96, 97, 100 miles an hour, and he mixes in a changeup here and there. It's really a fastball slider mix. There's definitely some relief questions, but I think when you look at a guy like this, he's starting to perform, he's starting to turn a corner, show some pitchability traits, and when you consider the background, as a two-sport athlete, I remember interviewing him years ago when he was up, you know, as a draft-eligible player out of high school. And it was very clear that he wanted to go to Iowa. He wanted to play football. He gave that a shot. Didn't work out. Now he's going the pitching route. And I believe that he's actually represented by Sam Samardzija, whose brother Jeff Samardzija did a very similar thing at Notre Dame.
And the thing that also you said, you mentioned Cade Horton, who, yeah, we were going to have on this show, but Cade was a little busy. He's in the air right now. You know, we already had him set up as a guest, but he's flying to, congratulations, Cade Horton, Cubs prospect, moving up to AAA today. But I'll give another guy, which is we saw what Joe Boyle's doing now in the big leagues. And I bring him up because Joe Boyle was another really big, really through, you know, through hard pitcher, throws really hard at Notre Dame, who always had control issues. And Boyle's control issues were always more significant, more troublesome than what we've seen with Brody Brecht. But that was kind of the question. And we've seen with, you know, in Boyle's case, the control issues are still there. The command issues are still there, but he still made it to the big leagues as a starter already. And with Brecht, the key number we're seeing lately is that we're basically, we're seeing the walk rate come down. We're seeing the strike rate go up. And that's the most important thing with him, because what is going to be the difference between him being a first-round pick or not is if you feel comfortable that the control is salvageable. Not that he's going to be Greg Maddux, he's going to dot corners or anything like that. He just needs to find the strike zone, and we've seen a lot more of that lately. So that's kind of encouraging for him, encouraging for Iowa, and encouraging for Brody's draft status as we get later here in the season.
Tons of draft coverage, obviously, coming up on this show, all over Baseball America. Make sure you have your subscription and, of course, on the podcast channel as well. Jeff, let's finish your segment here with a couple prospect standouts for the month of April. Would you like to start?
Yeah, sure. Got an opportunity to dig through some data over the last week, put an article out on the website. On Friday, looking at sort of 10 teenagers, so players who were 19 years of age or younger, that are at full season levels right now, that, you know, let's forget about the slash line. We're looking at contact rate, end zone contact rate, chase rate, 90th percentile, exit velocity, sort of a combination of skills. I'll almost call it the big three: contact, approach, and power. Really gives us a good idea of what a player's like. And it sort of removes some of the luck from the process where balls just aren't dropping. You're hitting the ball in the cold Midwest League. You know, you're 19 years old and maybe in an advanced level and facing more advanced competition. It kind of strips that away and just looks at it from a skill-based perspective. The first guy that I want to call out is Zaire Hope, who was acquired in the Michael Bush trade. I was actually talking with somebody with the Cubs organization earlier today, kind of talking about Hope a little bit. And it's one of those where it's like, yeah, wow, he's really blown up, but it's going to be a really good trade, I think, for both organizations. We've seen what Michael Bush has done at the major league level thus far, been a big piece for the Cubs. But, you know, conversely, the Dodgers, once again, go into another organization and get a really exciting prospect. And I think this guy might be one of the highest helium players in the minors right now. I mean, he was off of our Dodgers top 30 list. This is a guy that's going to jump up and I think continue to make a jump. The most impressive number for me there, though, Scott, is the 108.7 mile per hour, 90th percentile exit velocity as a teenager. That's well above major league average, just to sort of put it into perspective. The benchmark for an 18, 19 year old is usually 99 miles per hour with that metric. The fact that he's 108, he's well above it. He's already showing plus major league power. And he's doing it while, you know, swinging and missing at an average rate, doesn't miss in zone very often. The chase rate's pretty good. And it's a 45% hard hit rate. Hope is a name that I'm really excited about.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The other one I want to ask you about, Jeff, because again, it was your piece, is Jefferson Rojas with the Cubs. Speaking of a guy, we talked about a guy who was a Cub, who's now a Dodger, but now we also, Cubs fans also have a whole lot of hope of guys who still are Cubs, because Jefferson Rojas is a guy who, you know, we've been kind of very high on, kind of optimistic about for a few years here, but the data is matching a lot of the eye test and the scouting reports as well, it seems.
Yeah, and he was another guy that came up in some of my Cubs conversations doing some background work before we update those rankings. And, you know, the skills are phenomenal. I mean, it's like a 90% contact rate, the, you know, 90th percentile for a teenager, and he's not the biggest guy, is well above 102. And I think within the organization, you know, they mark him as a diamond prospect, as a guy that's sort of like a triple up arrow. You know, every trade conversation that's coming the Cubs way at this point, I'm sure one of the first names that teams are bringing up is Jefferson Rojas, because he is this type of prospect where there's great underlying skills. On top of that, there's some power, there's some twitch, there's some ability to stick in the infield. And guys like that just don't grow on trees. And often they turn into some of the top prospects in the game. It wouldn't shock me if, you know, by the end of this year, we're talking about Jefferson Rojas well within the top 50, probably on our top 100 list, because he's a fairly safe prospect. And, you know, we can see what he's doing already at an advanced level for, you know, a really young player. So if I was a Cubs fan following the minor leagues, Rojas would be a guy I'd circle and just try to watch and follow as much as possible because he's really exciting.
And Jeff, lastly, I can't let you go without pointing out your quarter zip, little Chatham A's action.
That's right, baby. I have I am a Cape Cod League fanatic. It's my favorite thing in the world. I'm a New England guy through and through. Grew up right outside the Cape. Had some friends from high school, teammates that played out there, and I follow all the teams. You know, you catch me on any given day. I could have Kituit stuff on, Bourne stuff on. I could have Wareham stuff on, Orleans, shout out to Kelly, you know, Falmouth. I got them all. We have a full collection of Cape Cod League swag and merchandise in my house. It's like 70% of my wardrobe.
Music to my ears, man. I called two seasons of Chatham A's ball back in the day. So it was one of my fondest memories.
When we hired Jeff, one of the things, he was coming on the pro side, but we're like, it was like, I still get to go to the Cape, right? It's like, yes, you can go to the Cape. You know, it was deal like a condition breaker of employment.
Yes, yeah. Yes. All right, deal breaker. I have to have Cape included in the contract or I'm out. Jeff, great to talk to you, and we'll get you again on Hot Sheet soon, okay?
Absolutely, man.
Thank you. All right, we are going to hit Helium Spot next. And we are going to bring in our next guest joining us right now, Ben Badler. Let's enter Ben onto the party here if he's ready to go. And we will go over some of the top pitching prospects that are on the rise right now in baseball. Ben, good to see you. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me on again.
Of course. Good to see you. So let's jump right into it. Pitching prospects that are on the rise because you're seeing an uptick in stuff. Let's go right into it.
Yeah, I mean, the first name to bring up is Brett Wisierowski with the Brewers, who they just announced a couple hours ago they're promoting him to AA, a very well-deserved promotion. This was a guy who, coming into the year, we didn't rank on the Brewers' top 30 prospects. I heard Jeff talking about how Zaire Hope is one of the big helium prospects in baseball right now. I would say the same thing for Brett Wisierowski as far as helium pitchers. This is a guy who was a 13th round pick last year out of Bryant, signed for 100K. Any team could have had this guy several times over, was not a big priority guy for any team really in the draft. He was splitting time between starting and relieving when he was at Bryant, and he had a good slider at the time. Fastball was low 90s, touch of 96. And now he looks like a totally different pitcher. He's sitting at 94, 97. He touched 100 in spring training. He's been up to 101 miles an hour. He's flashing a plus slider. He's throwing a lot of strikes. He just completely overmatched everybody in high A. So if you took like a college starting pitcher with this kind of stuff and the results obviously that we've seen now and that he had in high A, if you put him into the draft this year, I think a guy like that goes in the first round. I mean, we have pitchers right now ranked as back of the first round type guys who I don't think are as good as Brett Wisierowski. It's really been an incredible transformation for him this year.
So is it something the Brewers have cooking in general here right now? Because there are multiple Brewers on this list I'm seeing.
Yeah, I mean, he's not the only one, and he's not the only one from that last draft because – I mean, Bishop Letson is a high school right-handed pitcher they got in the draft last year. He was very lightly recruited for colleges. He committed to Purdue. Typically, Purdue is not sitting there on draft day sweating it out. Are they going to lose? You know, are we going to lose recruits the draft? But he was, you know, he was an 11th round pick. He was an overslot guy. He was more of a highly regarded prospect than Wisierowski was going into the draft. There was a lot of a lot of good projection indicators with Letson, you know, 6'4", lanky, really fast arm speed, a lot of room to fill out, very athletic. But he wasn't overpowering guys, right? He was touching 93 miles an hour. You're really making a bet on that physical projection coming through. And sometimes when, I'd say a lot of times, even when you make that bet, it doesn't really come to fruition. That projection never ultimately materializes. In Letson's case, at least just as far as the stuff we've seen so far, it's already there. This is a guy, again, who was touching 93 last year. Now he's sitting 92, 95, touching 98. He's flashing an above average slider. He's showing feel for a changeup. So it is a starter's mix. He's only throwing 3 innings per start. We got to wait and see a little bit more about the control, the pitchability, the durability, all that. But I mean, for everything we've seen so far, there's a lot to like. You know, if you took a pitcher like this and put him into the draft now, I mean, you're not getting him at the 11th round at the price you got him for, that the Brewers got him for. This is a, you know, $1 million type guy.
All right, so I want to take us right to some fan questions because we have quite a few to finish up the show. So we'll start running them through for JJ and for Ben. We'll do our best to get to as many as possible.
By the way, we are live. Yeah. As you do that, Scott, we are live because I saw that question. Are we live?
Yes, we are live. This show is live every single week. Now, if you're listening on the podcast side or you're watching the show afterward, hey, join us on Tuesdays at 3 o'clock Eastern time. But we are doing this live every single week. So Jay asks, what's going on with Drew Jones? JJ, you want to kick that one off?
I mean, I've been watching a lot of Drew at-bats this year. Good thing is the Cal League has a lot more video than it used to. And it's struggling. He's struggling. I do think that there's probably going to need to be some swing rework there. His something where his lower half and his upper half are not really all that well connected right now. So he really has trouble pulling the ball with authority. And instead, if he gets, you know, fastballs, kind of really hittable fastballs, he either hits him in the ground or he kind of flaring a lot of stuff to the opposite field. Great defense, can really run, but as far as a hitter, he's going to have to be able to kind of more consistently pull the ball in the air to get to the power, to get kind of to the potential he has. And right now, that's a concern because it's a very high strikeout rate to go with that. He's had a lot of injuries. He needs to be healthy, but that's kind of the big question with Drew right now.
Okay. Ben, anything else?
Or yeah, like, move on to the next one? Like JJ said, it's a 43% strikeout rate. I think the upper half and the lower half get disconnected in his swing. It's some swing path issues he's having now. So, I'd say very, very concerned right now.
Okay, Ben, I'll let you lead off this next question. Coming in hot, Mark asks, why isn't Heston Kjerstad getting playing time since being called up?
That is a good question. I wish I had a better answer for you because he definitely deserves to be playing more. I mean, obviously in that lineup, there's a lot of good competition that he has. But yeah, I would like to see him getting some more regular at-bats, especially given what he was doing in AAA. And it's not like he's a 21-year-old young, super young guy where, all right, ease him in a little bit. Like he's, 25 now? He's ready now. So hopefully I hope the playing time picks up for him.
I'll just add to that this is the problem the Orioles have. We've been talking about it on this show, I feel like every week, which is you have too much talent. And it's like, okay, I agree, he needs to play more. And then the problem is okay, who do you sit more on a team that, by the way, just keeps winning? Another big win last night as we record this, against the Yankees. So I want to see him play more, but at the same time, I kind of feel like that you could almost fill out a lineup and a half with Orioles guys that I want to see playing on a regular basis. It does seem like, though, we do know right now that Gunner's going to play every day and Adley's going to play every day. And that, on a lot of days, it seems like that's sufficient.
Didn't Colton Cowser, I know he didn't play a ton last year, and he struggled a little bit. But, it was tough for him to find playing time. And then, you had a home run every day or two for a week or so, and suddenly – you're going to find yourself in the lineup more frequently. The unfortunate news for Baltimore is we're only going to have 9 players on a lineup card. I don't think that's going to be changed for a long time. So I think, JJ, we're going to be able to insert this question for the next year or two with a number of players that are coming up from the Tides, because it's a good ball club at the top here. Even if some of these veterans eventually, you know, move on to free agency, I believe Santander is a free agent after this season. I would be kind of shocked if they keep him, even though he's a great ball player, just because of the influx of talent they have. And, you know, Santander is probably going to get a 10-figure salary per year, and they can replace him with someone who's making essentially 700 grand.
We need a petition for an EH. That's what that's the Orioles' big plan here. Is this, you know? I mean, we had, used to have an EH in softball a lot of times. So let's just get the extra hitter. Actually, I think I've seen that even in some amateur games. So let's get the EH in there.
All right, and it looks like we have a question on Corbin Carroll from Marcus. Got to ask about Corbin Carroll's struggles. Yeah, this is year two for Corbin. Were there any weaknesses that stood out in the minor league level, JJ, that you were concerned about long term with Corbin? Or are we just like, he's cold, he'll pick it back up?
My question is, I wonder if he's got, there's a little bit of an underlying injury there that maybe we don't know about right now. I hate to speculate on something like that, but he's had shoulder problems at times in the past, and this just doesn't look like the Corbin Carroll that we're used to seeing. It could be that he's just cold right now, but I also think that maybe it wouldn't shock me if we found out that there was something nagging. I'm not talking about career derailing or anything, but just it wouldn't shock me if we found out that there was some kind of nagging injury that was affecting his swing, things like that. Because this is just not the guy that we expect to see on a month-in, month-out basis.
Okay. Yeah, I'm wondering the same thing, if he's fully healthy, because he's still controlling the strike zone. He's still making contact, but what's way down is the hard contact. The exit velocity is way down. We've seen players play through injuries before, like Zach Veen last year, Marcelo Meyer with the Red Sox, the same thing. They play through it, whether they're, you know, telling the team or not, and just trying to tough it out and play. And then it turns out, oh, well, they're not 100% healthy. And both those guys are back this year and looking like, you know, the old versions of themselves that we, you know, really like as prospects. So I'm wondering if there is something that isn't totally 100% there with Carroll. And obviously, given, you know, his history with the shoulder, I think it's, a legitimate question to ask.
JJ, I'll let you finish with the last question we'll show for today. And we appreciate all the questions coming in here. We'll keep this running every week. Zach Gonzalez asks, why aren't more people talking about Lazar Montes? And I'll just give a little more context. A Cuban prospect playing at Modesto right now, single A for the Seattle Mariners. Well, he's only an A-ball, JJ. I guess that's what this show is for. Let's start talking about him.
Well, and also say, if you're a Baseball America subscriber, you're reading about him today because he is on the prospect hot sheet over at baseballamerica.com. I wrote him up today for that hot sheet. 2 3-hit games this past weekend. Really good hitter who has mega power. I mean, this dude's a monster physically. Has a chance to be a guy who can hit for average and power, which is always what you're looking for. The thing I'm also encouraged about, we've heard a lot of kind of questions about his defense in the past. I'm a nut, so like I fired up on Synergy Sports and looked at all the plays he's made defensively this year, and he's in right field. He's not making like highlight plays, but at the same time, he hasn't taken any bad reads. He hasn't had a play where he's thrown to the wrong base, anything like that either. So I think the defense has improved a little bit too, which is important for a guy who, again, he's a corner outfielder, but you want him to stay out there, not have to move to first base, not have to move to DH. And so that's encouraging. I do love all these questions we got. I wish we could get to all of them, but I will say to Marcus that we also are having stuff next week at Baseball America about Jason Chirio and Ralphie Velasquez. That's coming up as well at Baseball America and Alfredo Duno. We got a top 30 update and a top 100 update coming later this week at baseballamerica.com. And those are all guys to be paying attention to for that.
There you go. And yeah, keep the questions coming next week too. We'll get to them every week as long as a guest doesn't take up all of the time. But thanks everyone for joining us for this week's Hot Sheet. We are here every single Tuesday live on the Baseball America YouTube channel. If you miss it, you can catch it afterward on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. Just go to the Baseball America page. Ben, thank you very much. JJ, always great to see you, and we'll see everyone next week.